Welcome to the Amy Edwards Show. I'm your host, Amy Edwards, and I'm so happy you're here because we are all about transforming our lives in the most effective and efficient ways through mindset shifts and better habits. And today we have an expert with us whose message and mission is so aligned with exactly what we're doing on this show. I could not be more excited. So I am so excited that you're here too. Just a little bit of business up top. Don't forget to rate and review the show. If you hear something in here that calls to you or reminds you of someone, share it with a friend because that is how we grow and keep bringing on amazing guests like Brooke Stubbs, Dr. Brooke Stubbs today.
Thank you, Brooke.
Let me give you a little introduction too. And if I miss anything, please let me know. You are the founder of Rooted Femme. You are a double board certified internal medicine and lifestyle medicine physician. You have a master's of science degree in nutrition from Columbia University. Very impressive. You also have a bachelor's degree in chemistry and you studied visual arts and you have a husband and two children. So
that's me.
Wow.
Those are my experiences.
On paper, it's amazing and super impressive.
Well, thank you.
I just also want to say we met a couple of weeks ago when we were on the Women of Austin podcast with Mindy Hoffman.
Yes.
And I love Mindy. I would highly recommend people listen to that. We were on with Amanda Nelson and we talked about being your best self. And I was just so blown away by everything you said. We hadn't met before that, but I was like, please come on the show and share. So thank you for saying yes.
Oh, absolutely.
And I was just so excited to know you.
I'm excited to be here. I agree that, you know, I thought that was a great episode that Mindy put together.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the group of the three of us, we really bounced well off of each other and we have very aligned, you know,
No, aligned like visions, right?
Yeah.
Yes, we do. Visions of, you know, building not only ourselves, but sharing our knowledge
right.
to help others. And Amanda does too. She's going to be on the show and
okay.
be a guest really soon. And no, we really do. And I just, when I read your mission, which is on your website, it says your mission is to empower women in their prime, which I love you through an in their prime, to become masters of their health so they can show up fully in every area of their lives.
Well, it really is in our prime. You know, we, I guess part of that mission is that there's a huge gap in the healthcare system where we're left to our own devices and we're really passive bystanders to our health. We get thrown stuff from the government about how we should eat or marketing how we should eat or our parents or our friends or just society in general or what's convenient. And eating is just one aspect of it, right? You know, we're not managing stress or we're not taking time for our mental health or we're not exercising. So all of these things together, we're just being very passive in our health in these prime years where like we've left the pediatrician, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're not seeing a doctor until we get sick again, unless, you know, we're going through women's health stuff, whether
that's kind of all I do.
Yeah.
Like that's who I use as my primary too.
Yeah. And I think there's a huge strain on your OBGYN to, you know, to care, you know, like I got to my OBGYN the other day and they were like, it's, you know, it's your annual, you want your labs drawn. I'm like, well, you guys are doing a huge service to, you know, the population screening for things that you can find on labs and stuff like that. But I do think that there's so much we're not getting in a setting of healthcare that will promote better health and longevity instead of just using this acute care system. It's really more of a sick care system. So the prime of our lives is where we're, you know, where I'm focused.
I've totally neglected it. I'm exactly one of these people, you know, like, and I'll just be like, oh gosh, I better do something. Like we don't have a good system in place. So I just do what I can when I can. And plus it's like you listed all those things. It's overwhelming.
Yeah.
You know?
But it's totally understandable. That's the culture, right?
Yeah.
That's the culture just to like keep going with the flow and doing the things and putting business first or work first or family first and totally neglecting your health. If we could change a culture where we, you know, just divided some time and we set it aside to really focus on our health, I think we'd all be the better for it. And so that's kind of part of that mission too, is to get people to understand, to start investing, to be really actively engaged with their bodies and with their health journey so that they can live longer. And then it's not just about living longer and healthy or not getting a disease. It's like the vibrancy and the energy and just like not waking up with joint pain or belly bloat or whatever your symptom is, you know, enjoying your life fully, because if you are feeling well, that is really your wealth. You can really experience life to the fullest extent. People who are walking around in pain or with ailments, they really just can't be present or engaged as much as they could otherwise.
Oh, I've had some times of pain in my life. In fact, just this summer I was doing something and I ended up like my skin hurt.
Ugh.
And it was misery. Uh-huh. And I'll tell you what it was. Everybody's taking it right now, semaglutide, you know, to lose weight and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I took some semaglutide and that it hurt. I was nauseous all the time and my skin hurt. And so I stopped, but it took like weeks to wear off. But I had these thoughts about how it's so hard to be your best self when you're struggling with pain.
Right.
And so many times it's hard to make the association of what you're doing with that pain. Like, for instance, you speak a lot about gut health, and mm-hmm. I know that that has such implications with inflammation. So it's sometimes just difficult to get in the mindset of like, oh yeah, okay, these things are connected.
Right.
How do you get that clear to people?
Well, I think the first message is not to ignore it. Because a lot of times people do. They just think it's normal, quote unquote. But these signals, pain or discomfort, your body is sending you a red flag to say, fix what's going on underneath here so that we don't have to feel this way. Because all that is systemic inflammation. And it might affect you differently than it affects me, but it's inflammation. And we have to get to the root cause of that. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's stress, emotional or mental stress. Sometimes it's toxins in our body. Sometimes we're just feeding in insults of things that we think otherwise are healthy. I mean, one of the things that I talk about a lot is processed foods and how inflammatory they are for our body. You know, even meat, poultry, too, people think it's a really healthy, lean meat, but it's very inflammatory for our body. It has substances that create these insults to our system, and it can just start a cascade. For you, it might look like, you know, joint pains or, you know, skin or whatever. And for somebody else, it can be, you know, type 1 diabetes. And so, you know, it's just, it's not like one thing for one disease. It's like all of the diseases, all of the inflammation kind of fall under all of the same, you know, factors, right?
Yeah.
All of the same lifestyle factors. So it's, you don't have to change different things to lower your risk of different chronic diseases. You basically just have to live a healthy life all over. It's the same six factors for, you know, when I talk to fertility patients, when we see studies on fertility and what improves fertility, it happens to be the same thing that, you know, helps with glycemic control. And it happens to be the same thing that helps with heart disease. So it's not just,
you funny know, how that works,
right? It's like, right. if we can basically make the system work better, we can effectively change how that health outcome looks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so I like that you say insults to
your
body.
And I want you to think of it that way, because if your body gets an insult and it's going to send its armies, right? We think of like the immune system or all these inflammatory cytokines in our body as like our body's army. And we put an insult in it that it's not used to seeing. All of our energy goes to basically getting rid of that insult or healing that, you know, foreign invader.
Like defending. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And so then, you know, people get fatigue or, you know, they, you know, it's just like, it is an insult, and your body feels it all over. And it's not just, you know, if you're getting inflammation throughout your coronary arteries, it's not just happening in the arteries in your heart. It's happening in all the arteries and veins in your whole body. And,
damn.
You know, I like to think of it that way, because, you know, you can get an insult from your gut and it starts the cascade all the way from, you know, your immune system, and just it releases everywhere to find the insult.
I'm going to ask about you personally. Do you live in a way where if you experience an insult or do something that causes one, do you just notice it right away?
Oh,
are
yeah.
Are you so in tune?
So in tune. It's almost annoying, because I used to be very, you know, like laissez-faire about my diet or any number of things.
How long ago was that?
Just a few years ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then what shifted?
Well, I think at the time, so a few things shifted. So my daughter is 4, but when we were trying to conceive her, I ended up going through IVF for endometriosis. And knowing as a physician that endometriosis is an inflammatory condition, I started to look at the things that would affect inflammation. And at the time, I wasn't introduced to a lot of what I know now about nutrition. So I was trying to eat a lot of antioxidant type foods.
Okay.
Fast forward to our second child, I was working as a hospitalist. I was really burnt out. I loved the job. I loved the people. I loved the patients. I loved the purpose I had there.
But you still had a master's in nutrition at this point, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And they basically, I was stressed, but then I was also worried about my IVF journey too. And so I was looking at my diet. I wanted to be a little bit more in tune with the anti-inflammatory nature of endometriosis to give myself the best chance of our second round of IVF. I was talking to my fertility doctor, who's a good friend of mine, and she was like, well, you know, poultry is inflammatory too. Like, you really should. And that's kind of where like this lifestyle medicine was introduced to me. And I was like, yeah, I really should look into that or whatever. And so that was like my first, yeah, I just want to get rid of meat. I don't even like chicken. I don't really like red meat that much. Let's just like get that out. That's the first thing we can do. And then at the same time, I realized how much stress I was under at work. And so it was like, there was just like change after change after change. And I'm learning about lifestyle medicine. And I'm like, I got to get out of this job. It's killing me. I'm seeing my colleagues get strokes and heart attacks. And I know that this stress is affecting me. And so that was, my son is now 2.5. So that was like 2.5 years ago. And so there was like progressive changes that didn't all happen at once. It was kind of like, I'm going to eat better. Now I'm going to focus on not doing meat. Now I'm going to focus on like my stress. And then it was like, now I'm going to get rid of the processed food. And so it was it's really been in like the last 1.5 years that I've been super clean about how I eat and my sleep habits and waking up and exercising and meditation and like really bringing it all together. Mm-hmm. But with all of that comes this very fine-tuned sense about my body. So if I eat just like one poor meal or one bad appetizer, or, you know, if I have like one margarita, I'm going to feel it. I'm going to know that that's what's not letting me sleep at night. And I'm going to know that's why my belly hurts. And I'm going to know that's why I'm bloated or constipated. Like, I can pinpoint it. I can know if I just eat one thing and my weight is up like a pound the next day. I can I'm that fine tuned on what's going on with my system now.
So have you shifted your mindset so you think of other things as fun now?
I mean, I know, right? Because it sounds like zero fun, right? It sounds like if you have to be that strict about life, would it be any fun?
I was just thinking about this today. Yes, as I'm on the Rainbow Reset, and I thought, so we have ever enjoy fries again, like, or you know, a drink? I'm not drinking.
Do you like?
I don't know.
Do you like all of the plant foods you're eating right now?
I love it.
Right? Okay, so there's a sense of well-being that you gain from focusing on yourself, and it's very invaluable. A friend of mine and I have a podcast as well, and the title of it is That Rooted Feeling, and it's that feeling of well-being that you get when you start putting these things into practice. And to say that I would ever not focus on them, I would feel awful. I cannot imagine walking through life now the way that I do, having been walking through life for 35 years the way I was. Like, the dichotomy of how I feel and that just overall sense of heightened well-being is insane. It's totally different. Changed my life.
Are you ready to up-level your pleasure practice? I have in mind, and one of the tools that I've used is from Wands. That's W-A-A-N-D-S. One of my favorite items that they have is the cervix wand. It is their number one best-selling glass pleasure wand for vaginal and anal de-armoring. That means more sensation. That means more getting in touch with your body. It's designed for cervical and G-spot stimulation, and it has helped thousands of women become more connected to themselves and their own pleasure while supporting them to heal pelvic pain through self-yoni massage. So if you are curious about getting more in touch with yourself, then I have an offer for you. you can get a discount using my code Amy Edwards. But if you use the link in the show notes, you can get 20% off from Wands. They have so many other beautiful items to choose from, with a large selection of 100% pure crystal pleasure wands. They create the most gorgeous, luxurious products that encourage you to honor your body, celebrate your sexuality, and live in pleasure, which is a big part of what we're about on this show. And yes, I use one myself. So go today to wands.com, that's WAANDS, and use the code Amy Edwards for 10% off, or use my link in the show notes for 20% off of your purchase from Wands. Again, my favorite is the cervix wand. It is trademarked and it is amazing. Take it from me. Check it all out and the reviews on wands.com. That's WAANDS.com. And use my link in the show notes for 20% off.
I guess the thing is, most of us or most people have never experienced that.
You don't know what you're missing.
So you don't know what you're missing. And for me, so now I've gone back and forth through, I read a book about, by Jonathan Safran Foer, Eating Animals, years ago, and I just went vegan. And it's a tough book to read. If anybody wants to read it, it will turn you vegan. And so over time, I, you know, was managing my kids and things like that. Mm-hmm. And it just slipped, you know, it just slipped. And then I didn't feel like I was getting enough protein, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, it's slipped enough now to where I just was eating anything in this last year, I would say. I went from vegan to not. And I've attempted to get back to it in different times. But now that I'm doing this Rainbow Reset with Prep to Your Door, who you work with, and Heather's going to be on the show and I'm going to be talking a lot about it. I'm just noticing like, oh my gosh, I'm going through this again. I've been detoxing these last few days and just... It's just really a coming back to it. So I do know what I can, actually, I don't know the full extent of what I can get to because this is so clean. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited to see, but then I was like, I started to panic about how am I ever going to maintain this? Like, how am I going to, you know, I had a little feeling of that, like in real life, how am I going to maintain this?
Right. It's about really creating foundations that are sustainable, not trying to do it all at once. Mm-hmm. You know, getting the things out of your kitchen or your pantry that aren't going to serve you. Really getting things out of marketing containers, committing to not having processed foods. You know, it's, I think it's easy to get rid of meat. I think that's an easy thing. I think it's the mindset that people have, like you mentioned, about the protein. We've been told for so long that we need animal source of protein with our diet for a complete meal. And so when we don't have that, we think like, oh, that's not going to fill me up, all those fruits and vegetables. But fruits and vegetables have so many nutrients. They're so nutrient dense that they have these satiating qualities that animal products or processed foods don't have. So there's a little bit of education and there's a little bit of just like committing, you know, getting a few easy things down. Like, for instance, and the environment too. Mm-hmm. But let me talk about like kind of the easy things that I do. I'm pretty consistent like with what I eat in the morning. I have like three go-to options and I'll eat them over and over again, but I'll kind of change up the accoutrement. You know, I'll put like, you know, onions and tomatoes on my avocado toast with sesame seeds and, you know, sprouts depending on what I have mm-hmm. in the house. And then, you know, maybe I'll switch it up to like a peanut butter toast, or maybe I'll do a smoothie with all kinds of different, you know, spinach and berries and seeds and barley fiber. And then I'll switch it up to, you know, I do this porridge that has really beneficial whole grains like oat groats and barley pearls and rye berries and all of that stuff. So I have like three go-to things and I know I can do those, but I get the variety in adding different things to them. So that kind of gives me like an easy foundation. Like my go-tos are healthy. And same thing for lunch. My go-to is always leafy greens with whatever on top of it, mm-hmm. right? And so that generally like leads to a lot of vegetables and some, you know, it obviously dressing, but some nuts and things like that I can maintain that. That's an easy go-to for me. And then for dinner, I have like a you know, rotating list of five things that it's like, if, unless we're going out, it's stir fry tacos, a Buddha bowl, a pasta dish, or
I can do all that.
A soup. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it, you can change up what's in there. So you get the variety, but it doesn't feel hard. Right. So those are easy things. And then I have like five or six restaurants that I know I can order in from if I'm just not into cooking, and they have three or four plant-based meals that I can just readily get. Mm-hmm. And so that makes it easy, right?
Are you gluten-free?
I'm not gluten-free.
Okay.
I do have like a reaction, some bloating to wheat flour. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a twofold thing. I think our wheat supply has been modified.
Yes.
And so I think it's not great for our gut. But also being processed into a flour, I think also adds that little component. Now my kids will eat whole wheat flour and they're okay with that. And, you know, they don't get any side effects. But barley and rye both have gluten in it, and I can eat those in a whole grain form and have no problem. So I'm not gluten intolerant. It's more mm-hmm. of like, I really don't do well with processed foods, but I think that's most of us.
Yeah. And no, I wonder if people who have these sensitivities and things like that, if they were eating more clean gluten sources.
Right.
You know?
Organic and not modified.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a dumb question.
No, it's sorry. Not dumb.
What I'm does sure. processed mean exactly? Does it just beat down into?
Yeah. So anything that takes it from its original form. Okay. So here's a really good example. So if you have an apple, mm-hmm. right? So you can process it a number of ways. Well, you can process it a little bit to a apple sauce, and then you can process it more to an apple juice. So like you're going to basically take away the mastication when you put it into mm-hmm. an apple sauce, right? And if you're going to get an apple sauce from the grocery store, it's going to have preservatives in it. So it better to be make your own applesauce, right? Okay. So there's different ways to process things, mm-hmm. right? You could have additives. You can just mash it up. You can add preservatives. You go one step further, you can put in a juice, you get rid of a lot of fiber and phytonutrients. That's another form of processing. And then you can go even further than that. You can have apple jacks, right? So then you've just further ground it up into just like a flavor component. And then, you know, so there's differing degrees of processing. And over here in the apple jacks, that's like our ultra processed foods. Mm-hmm. So you want to have as few processed foods as possible. You want to have as many whole plant foods as you possibly can. And then, you know, these things over here, these ultra processed, you don't want to have any of them. Mm-hmm. And the reason why is because your body just doesn't process those the correct way. So if they're already in that process form, they get right into your bloodstream. And I like to think of the fiber component of the whole food. So fiber comes from plants. We think of fiber sometimes as a supplement, but fiber actually comes from plant foods. Mm-hmm. And so I like to think of it as like the escort or, you know, kind of security guard to get you into the body, right? So if you show up to a club and you're processed food, and you get right past the security guard and get right into the bloodstream, there's going to be a dozen, you know, security guards inside there to throw you out, right? And that's like the upheaval that your body witnesses when it gets, you know, when it gets absorbed into your bloodstream right away. What you really want is you want food to be attached to fiber. Fiber gets all the way, it gets past all the digestive enzymes in your upper GI tract through the stomach acid, through the duodenum. It gets all the way to the colon, past the small intestines into your large intestines, which is your colon. And there the fiber starts to feed. It's attached to all these other phytochemicals, nutrients for you, but it starts to feed your gut bacteria. And as it does that, those gut bacteria turn these fibers into short chain fatty acids, butyrate, propionate, acetate. We know that they're all associated with really beneficial health outcomes. And so these little short chain fatty acids are like the security guard that say, okay, you can come in and you pass through into your body's system without this big, you know,
charge of other things. Yeah.
Right. There's no insult to the system. It's mm-hmm. just it's like letting nutrients pass that are beneficial to your body.
There was a lot in there.
I'm sorry.
No, no, don't apologize. No, I think
I get really impassioned about it. Because
I'm glad you do. Yeah. I think that's so cool. Well, so let's talk about gut health a little bit.
Yeah, let's do that. Yeah. So when we talk about fiber, we need fiber to help our gut health. So things like ultra processed foods, animal products, dairy, they're all going to feed bad bacteria in our gut, right? And then they produce things like secondary bile salts and bacterial endotoxins, which create leaky gut.
Yes.
Okay. And this is all under the heading of dysbiosis. If you have too many bad gut bacteria and you have a leaky gut, like meaning that mucosal lining has broken down, we call that dysbiosis.
Okay.
Okay. And that can...
Such a gross term.
Yeah.
Right? You know?
All these bad bacteria. Yeah. So that ends up leading to disease, right? Your immune system is heightened. It's now... Not only is there inflammation that leads to like systemic disease, like heart disease or strokes or diabetes, of course, metabolic disease like obesity, but it also can lead to cancers like colon cancer being a huge one. And then autoimmune disease, your immune system is now exposed technically to the outside. Your gut, all the bacteria, your gut is actually outside your body. But then if you break down that lining, your bloodstream sees what's outside your body and it recognizes it kind of as foreign. So that immune system now has the opportunity to see foreign invaders and start mounting immune response. The problem is sometimes the same proteins that it sees as foreign invaders mimic some of the proteins in our body. And then you end up with possibly autoimmune disease, you know? And so we've correlated some autoimmune disease to, you know, a dysbiotic gut and to our nutrition. And so on the flip side of that, we can start to build a really healthy gut by feeding our gut good fibrous plant foods, because that fiber is going to, all different plant foods have different fibers that are going to feed specific species of gut bacteria. And the more variety of those fibers you get, the more variety of plant foods you get, the more diversity of good gut bacteria you're going to have in your gut. And that's key to health. That is ultimately the key to really good overall health, is having a really wide variety of good gut bacteria.
Yeah.
And so if I'm eating, you know, anything, if I'm eating an apple or a salad or whatever, I'm feeding different bacteria with each of those foods. And so the American Gut Project is one of the biggest microbiome studies. They took stool from over 11,000 people from the UK and the US, and they analyzed it and they did a survey. And the one lifestyle factor that correlated to a good diversity of gut bacteria was 30 different plant foods or more per week. So that's kind of like the resting recommendation. You know, like the survey had it broken down for like 0 to 5, 5 to 10. You know, I don't remember the exact breakdown, but over 30 was correlated with a better gut microbiome. And so 30 or more, but why not shoot for 35 or 40 or 50? And then, you know, you get all this variety of fiber and you have this great gut bacteria and then you live longer. And we're really not supposed to be, you know, this isolated species. Like, we are vastly outnumbered. Our genome is vastly outnumbered by the genome of these organisms in our bodies. We are just basically an ecosystem for these bacteria, and they're supposed to be symbiotic for us. And if they're not, they're going to perpetuate disease in our bodies.
What do you say about this whole movement? At least I've seen a lot of it about the carnivore diet and, you know, eating liver and all these things that they're saying we have to eat. Have you seen this? You may not be on that side of Instagram. I don't know.
Yeah. And I probably should pay attention to it more, but sometimes I'm so entrenched in what I'm doing. But
sure.
You know, I guess my thought is, you know, I would like to see how this happens long term. We have seen longevity studies and cohort studies on what is the best diet in the people who live the longest. And a really good example of this, which is really easy to explain, is the Blue Zones. And I don't know if you've read that book by Dan Buettner.
I have not, but I've heard of it.
Yeah. So there's he explains that there's five different places in the world, areas in the world where they had the most centenarians, or people living over 100. And what he found out was there were specific factors that led to their longevity and reduced risk of chronic disease. And having a plant-based diet was one of those factors. And, you know, sometimes they would have meat every once in a while, or sometimes they would have fish every once in a while. And so I'm, you know, everybody has to go through their own journey. I'm not going to poo-poo anybody who's on a carnivore diet, other than for me, I think that's very scary, knowing what I know about the research and knowing what I know about studies that keep us healthy for a long time, knowing how your cholesterol can be affected and how cholesterol is associated with heart disease. I mean, all of these things are floating through my mind when you mention that. And really, I'm just scared for those people. But like, you know, if that's their journey, that's their journey. I just don't think we have any long-term studies to correlate with what that looks like in terms of health and longevity.
I think they're talking about, you know, how people ate as, you know, cavemen or something like that.
Right. But I think even cavemen hunted and gathered. I think getting the hunt was probably less frequent than they could, you know, pick berries from a tree.
And probably 30 different things. Yeah. As much as they could anyway.
Right.
Yeah. So, I had another, how do you get any, feedback from other doctors about how they feel about a plant-based diet, or is that pretty widely accepted now in the medical community?
I think it's pretty widely accepted. And Kim Williams, he was the president of the American College of Cardiology, and he famously said, there's two types of cardiologists, either vegans or those who haven't read the data. So it's kind of like this kind of joke in some of the medical world who's privy to it, that like, you probably would change your diet if you'd read all the data. So maybe it hasn't trickled down to everybody. And certainly I don't think it's being taught in medical schools, maybe some of them. Mm-hmm. I know Harvard has a lifestyle medicine program, so they're probably getting the forefront of this like nutrition information. But, you know, and probably some other universities too. But for by and large, it's not being taught in medical school. And we have so much other things to focus on in medical school. Mm-hmm. I mean, the amount of information, I mean, doctors are just a plethora of knowledge, and we get a bad rap because we can't fix everybody all the time. And it's, you know, we all have the best of intentions, but we're burnt out and we're overworked and the system is working against us and all that stuff. But, you know, doctors are really trying hard. So the fact that they don't know everything about nutrition, I really can't fault them, right? Mm-hmm. But I do think by and large, if you know the studies, you're on board.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are some outliers who will have like, you know, specific things about plants being bad for you, but it's not founded on long-term data.
Well, what you said about chicken even is very interesting. Like, mm-hmm. I do know that the way that it's raised and what is put into it are not things that we want in our body, but, you know, I still will eat it or think that it's healthy or something like that.
I know.
So, yeah.
I know. And can you imagine just like, you know, it's funny because people are like, well, what do your kids eat? There's nothing in here. And I'm like, well, there's all kinds of fruits and vegetables. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, feed them that. Like, yeah. You know, like that's food. That is what we're supposed mm-hmm. to eat. And so it's really about changing what you see on the plate as a meal, making half of your meal definitely fruits and vegetables, putting some whole grains, then getting your proteins from things like legumes and nuts and seeds. And maybe every once in a while you have an egg or a fish, right? That's how the Canadian, you know, plate is. That's their recommendations for how to eat. Our recommendations from the USDA tend to be influenced by industries like the meat and dairy industry.
For sure.
Yeah. So
I do know though that my times as vegan, I've never felt better.
Yeah.
I mean, I really did. I made a concerted effort to eat salads basically all the time, or stir fries basically all the time.
Yeah.
And then I love peanut butter, so I'm kind of a freak about that. Yeah. What exactly is lifestyle medicine? Can you define that? Because I didn't even know
it was a thing.
No.
Right. Yeah. So it's a specialty of medicine. It's newer, right? So it was founded in 2005, I believe. And then residencies came about in 2015. And so you have to, in order to be board certified, you have to have a board certification from another accredited specialty in medicine.
Okay.
But it's all evidence-based. So it's the preventative factors, the modifiable lifestyle factors that can prevent or treat chronic disease. And that they're based on six pillars of health. So the six pillars are nutrition, right? Plant-based nutrition, exercise or movement, moving your body, sleep, getting adequate sleep, like an average of 8 hours.
It's pretty simple so far.
Yeah. stress management, right? Okay. Lowering your stress, getting out of that sympathetic drive and, you know, tapping back into a parasympathetic, you know, system. And then avoiding toxins. We talk about alcohol and drugs, and we talk about environmental toxins, or, you know, we can talk about endocrine disruptors and, you know, any number of chemicals in our world. And then social support. So social connections are really associated with long-term reductions in chronic disease and mortality. And so that's what lifestyle medicine is founded on. When I practice, I add some things on just like mindset, and I talk about hydration and dental health, and I kind of end up being like a nutritionist, a physician, and a therapist all in one.
It sounds like it. But I like that, because it's this holistic approach that you even say that on your thing, on your website thing, that your health is determined by the sum total of the quality in all aspects of life.
Yeah.
And that's what I try to talk about on this show, like keep it simple, but just tune into those things, you know? Mm-hmm. And like, yeah, it's challenging to cut out drinking. Yeah, sure. But actually, it's really not that challenging. You know, it sounds hard, but then when I take it day by day and I just take it moment by moment, like, do I want to drink right now? No.
And you go by how you feel.
Yeah.
And there's a little bit more well-being without it. And so let's say you drank, it's like each time you do that, it's one more mark against drinking, because you know how you feel afterwards.
Yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm. And so when you start to correlate all that data in your mind, it just pushes the needle a little bit further. And that's how I felt. Like, I didn't get rid of cheese for a long time, but I would try and go a while without it. And then I would have it again. And then I would be like, oh, okay, yeah, I get it. It's my joints ache, my knees hurt. And then I would go for a little bit longer the next time. And so it's kind of just like paying attention to how you feel and then making those steps little by little, not, you know, giving yourself some
grace. It's been interesting to watch my partner who has celiac, and he's now doing this rainbow reset also from Prep to Your Door. Yeah. And so I don't know if you knew he was doing that. And he's a big guy, and it's been interesting because all of a sudden he's like, oh, now when he's cutting things out and then he'll put it back in, just like you just said. And he's like, oh, I can feel this. I've got to cut it out. Like, I can tell the inflammation. It's so obvious. And so,
particularly gluten, I'm assuming.
Yes. Oh about. Yeah. For him. Yeah. But I'm noticing it too with myself. Like, I'll go a long time without eggs, and I hated eggs when I was growing up. And I've always wondered if I had a sensitivity. I've never done a test, but then when I just eat them, I'm like, oh yeah, it's not worth it.
Yeah.
It's not worth it.
And I will say there is a flip side of that. When you start adding a lot of fiber to your diet that you haven't had before, that you don't really have the established gut bacteria to start digesting, you're going to notice some discomfort. You're going to have some bloating. You're going to have some, you know, irritability. You're going to, you know, probably have some gas. And there's two ways to approach that. You can make really clear mental notes of what it is you're eating and know what's causing that kind of sensitivity. And there's always a threshold, you know, for some people might be greater or less, but just eat underneath that threshold. Start to build that gut microbiome around those really healthy plant foods. Don't get rid of kale because the first time you've had kale in 2 years, you got gassy and you know it affects you that way. Well, there's a reason it affects you that way. There's fermentation that happens to that kale. But if you go slow and add a little bit more over time, you can start to establish that healthy gut bacteria that will take care of that discomfort. The other way to do it, not going slow and not going underneath the threshold, is just to like go at it and, you know, get through the discomfort. And, you know, who knows how long that will last, maybe a week, maybe two. But there's two ways to do that. And it really will benefit the gut microbiome in the long term.
I'm doing the second way right now.
Okay.
As we sit here. Yes. Yeah. I mean, I'm just plowing through. And because I know what's on the other side, but I mean, my first few days, you can hear it too. I'm a little stuffy. I think I'm just detoxing and just, I know I'm detoxing, you know, and I'm experiencing just this push of adjustment to the all the healthy things that I'm putting in, which is a trip that, you know, we become so accustomed to it.
Right.
Like an addiction, really. Uh-huh. And I'm detoxing. I'm having headache. I feel like I have a hangover for about 3 days when I really get healthy.
Yeah.
And I've never eaten as healthy as I'm doing on this Rainbow Reset. Like this is next level healthy. This is no plastic. This is
Yeah, they do a good job. They do a really good job.
Oh my God, they do a good job.
Absolutely.
I'm blown away
and
by
And the food is delicious.
And that's the thing too I was going to say about my partner. I mean, he's, you know, people would look at him and think, oh, an MMA fighter, you know, whatever, big guy, he's eating a lot of protein or whatever. And he's been vegan before and he's really enjoying this.
Yeah.
So I don't, you know.
And I'm sure you guys have watched Game Changers.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm sure he likes that. Yeah, if he's been vegan.
Actually, I had to make him watch it. He hasn't watched the whole thing, but he was vegan to prepare for climbing Mount Kilimanjaro, I believe, for 6 months. Awesome. So yeah, which is super interesting too, right? Because you think, I don't know, people just have their own perceptions of it.
Right.
And you have to watch the science, watch these documentaries and the science behind it. And then there's a whole other group of people that comes in and barks about their thing. So
yeah.
But I know for me personally, it feels really good.
Right.
So I'm excited to see, you know, this change that I can make, because I feel like for me, my diet has been the one thing in this holistic picture that I have just gone back and forth on, you know, drinking and my diet. And so I'm excited to really see what's possible.
Yeah.
And I always try to treat things too. I tell people, treat things like an experiment, you know, and I think that's an interesting perspective too, to just experiment with it. Do you feel like you do a lot of that? I guess as a physician, you probably.
Yeah, I do. In fact, like my next experiment, I haven't fully committed, but it's going to be
the next experiment.
Yeah, yes. It's going to be to do a continuous glucose monitor and see how different foods affect my blood glucose.
Oh, how interesting.
There's actually a company called Levels. And there it's run by, or, you know, on their board is a Stanford trained physician who she got out of, I think, ENT medicine to focus on this, because she like me, she was just so impassioned about, we weren't doing enough for people. Like, you know, we weren't keeping them healthy. And, anyway, so she's really into how different foods affect your blood sugar. And so I think that's my next experiment.
Super interesting.
Yeah.
Going back to your own journey and your own implementation of diet. Mm-hmm. First of all, you mentioned endometriosis in there. Is that inflammation? Is everything just inflammation? It is, right?
I mean, more or less. And it'll affect different areas and it'll manifest in different ways. But yes, endometriosis is where you have ectopic endometrial tissue in places it shouldn't be. And so ectopic means like it can be in the tubes. It can be in the, you know, the tubes are open to the abdominal cavity. So it can be within the abdomen. It could be on the bowels. It can be anywhere within that abdominal cavity. And sometimes I think it even could get in the bladder and it can get into the actual bowels, you know, within the mucosa.
Wow.
And so it's just this tissue that's supposed to be in the uterus, but it gets outside of the uterus, and with each cycle, it becomes inflamed. And so that inflammation causes scarring, and it can lead to, it can get into the ovaries as follicles like open up and you release a follicle each time you ovulate. It can get in the ovaries. It can scar down the ovaries. So that's one way it affects fertility. And then the inflammation just around it isn't very conducive to like this very fragile embryo to implant and to grow. And so you have to take care of both of those things. You got to make sure you have a working ovary that's releasing follicles. You have to have open fallopian tubes that aren't scarred down to get the egg to the uterus. And then you have to have the uterus be like really, you know, this calm womb environment, you know, that's welcoming.
It's amazing anyone gets pregnant.
Yeah.
Honestly.
But a lot of us do.
I know. Somehow we do. I don't know how it is
a miracle.
It is a miracle, an absolute miracle. So that's just really interesting to me about your journey too. And then what differences did you start to see once you really started implementing this?
Yeah. I'm glad you asked that, because it's gone. Like, I used to be doubled over in pain just before my period would start, and probably for about 2 days as my uterus would contract, it was terrible. And I knew exactly when my period was coming, because I could be in the car driving and the lower back pain was so severe.
Wow.
Yeah. And I used to like stay home from school. And, you know, my OBGYN when I was 17, who isn't my OBGYN now, but she was like, I'm pretty sure you have endometriosis. We can either, the only way to diagnose it is through a surgery, you know.
Wow.
And in, you know, a laparoscopic surgery mm-hmm. where they can actually go in and see that ectopic tissue. But at the time, you know, I would have to, they would ablate it then, but I'd have to get the surgery again when I was ready to get pregnant. So they're like, well, or we could just kind of try and treat it as if you have it and dampen that response. So they put me on continuous birth control for a long time so that I wouldn't have as many cycles, so that I wouldn't have as much inflammation, wouldn't get as much scarring.
Wow.
Really saved my yeah. ovaries, honestly.
Wow, really? Yeah,
because even with that, because I would go on and off it just like being young and naive mm-hmm. and not really knowing what I was treating, but was on it for most of the time from like age 17 to 31. Even with that, I still had scarring on the back of my uterus. I had scarring on one of my fallopian tubes and on a lot of my bowel.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so now it's gone? You said? Or,
so the scarring is still there,
scarring.
But well, I get no more pain. Zero. Not any, not even. And also like the PMS or the premenstrual like dysphoric disorder, you know, you can get like irritability and all that stuff. That's gone too. And so I have no idea. I don't track my cycle because I never had to in the past. And so mm-hmm. I'm very bad about it. Like I kind of have an idea when it's coming, mm-hmm. but I have literally no idea when it's coming anymore because I don't have any of those warning signs. I don't get in fights with my husband before it comes. I don't get doubled over with pain before it comes. I used to get diarrhea before it was come. All that's gone.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's an incredible testament. Do you notice that with your clients too, or patients, I guess I should say?
Oh yeah. I mean, I joke that like the best way to lose a patient is when they get pregnant, you know, mm-hmm. and I'm like batting 1,000. So I lose a lot of patients because they get pregnant, but it's great because, you know, things just, I mean, even patients who are like, well, I want to try and get pregnant in the future. And then I'm like, well, let's talk about your diet. And they'll be pregnant 2 months later. And they're glad about it because it was in their foreseeable future, but they had been off birth control for so long that they just thought, okay, I'm not going to get pregnant. It's not that easy to get pregnant. And then they change their diet or they change their stress level and they're pregnant like that.
Wow.
Some people it's harder for. I think mindset and stress plays a big role in that.
For sure.
But
for sure.
Yeah, I see a huge difference in fertility in a lot of
But if you're patients. Eating better, your mindset and stress is going to be different too. Oh, I mean, so
I think the energy around food yeah, is incredible.
It really is.
Yeah.
So, can I ask you, and I don't know if you want to answer this personally or from a patient perspective, or what you've seen, but sexually, what do you notice too in people? And
well, I like my husband more.
Really?
Yeah. I think when you're taking care of yourself, you know, I learned this, through this, I'm also going through a spiritual journey, which I think is very in line with the nutrition aspect and this, you know, the meditation and the yeah. exercise aspect. I think when you change towards these healthier habits, you just end up, you know, growing in all aspects, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it really has opened the door to really being like more spiritual and understanding what's going on when things aren't great and how I can... you know, the perspective I can have for that. So I mentioned that to say one of these spiritual perspectives is that everybody becomes a mirror for what you need to work on for yourself. And so when I would get upset with my husband or when I wasn't attracted to him, it was something about me that I wasn't attracted to.
Do you have an example?
It would be, so here's a good example. He would just like have a rash judgment and it would make me so upset. I'd be like, why would you just judge somebody like that? You don't know them. They haven't done anything to you. And I would get like this visceral ache about it. It really affected me emotionally. And I was talking to a spiritual coach and she said, okay. And I said, I'm going to turn this on you because I don't believe that I'm that judgmental. I don't judge people like that. And she goes, okay, I'm going to ask you a question. Do you judge yourself like that? And I just started crying. I was like, that's exactly why it bothers me, because I feel like when I put myself out there, somebody could come and judge me. So then when I realized he wasn't, that was being presented to me so I could heal that part of myself, I stopped being so angry at him and started like working on myself. So it's just, it's been this focus. And then you learn. So that's one thing.
Like, that's amazing. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah. So communication really, I think, opens me up to intimacy. I don't know if you're the same.
Yeah, big time.
I kind of need that, like, really that deep connection. And I couldn't get there while I was holding on to a lot of my own pain or my own judgments about myself. And I didn't even see that, you know, before my whole health journey. So then I work on myself. I'm able to see things better in my relationship. I get more intimacy. Sex is better. I also have like a device in my office that has electromagnetic pulses that helps with vaginal health. So, I mean, my sex life is pretty good. I can't complain. Yeah. I think it's probably partially the food and the diet and feeling really great about myself and having confidence. Whereas like before all of this, it was like, I didn't want to get naked. I wasn't attracted to my husband as much. You know, he's a very attractive person, but it's all of those things. It was more about my mindset. And now I can just be a little bit more confident. I can be a little bit more free. I have more energy. I have more vibrancy. And yeah.
Has he shifted his eating too? How's that been for your relationship?
He'll eat what I cook. And so if I'm cooking all vegan, he'll eat all vegan, he'll eat whole foods. Good. He was already pretty healthy, with the exception of, the meat. Mm-hmm. So he's cut back quite a bit. But if we're out, he'll order the meat or the sushi or whatever.
Yeah, or whatever he wants. So, it's so interesting too how you put it, everyone's a mirror. Because I didn't know what you were going to say about, the judgment. And what ended up happening too with him? I mean, like, did you notice him still doing that, or did it just not affect you anymore?
I think there was kind of a crossroads in our relationship where it was like, I'm growing, I'm really working on things. You know, I can go as far as I can go without you also being an active participant in this. Mm-hmm. And, and that's sometimes the hard thing about growth. And that's, this is really vulnerable and candid, but like things start to get hard when you're on your growth pattern sometimes. Mm-hmm. And they did for us for a little while. And I have to hand it to him. I have to give him all the credit in the world. He really stepped up and he was like, I'm going to take this in stride and I'm going to better myself. And so that's why I know I have the right partner in him. But sometimes I've heard the opposite. I know other physicians in this world who've really grown and they're maturing and other people, and there's a lot of tension in the relationships, and maybe they end up losing that relationship. And, that can happen with friends too. And so I think, growth can sometimes be hard if you start leaving people behind.
Mm-hmm. I feel like life can ask you too, like, do you really mean it? Do you really want this? Do you really mean it?
And like, so, be warned, like, your expansion is going to start speeding up if commit to this.
At least in my own experience, that seems to happen. I think so too. Mm-hmm. I'm doing a solo episode kind of about that actually coming up.
So. Oh, I can't wait to hear it.
Thank you. All right. One of the main words on your website was consistent. And that is the trick, I feel like.
Right.
Consistency.
Yeah.
And so even when you were talking about your past, like, and how you introduced it slowly or whatever, it's that getting consistent that gets me to like, I try to give myself grace around it, understand that I'm human, all those things, because we're not going to be perfect.
Right.
So how do you recommend this consistency without getting into perfectionism?
Okay. So I suffer with perfectionism. I will say that first.
Same.
Yeah. And I think that, you can either ridicule yourself for perfectionism, and then sometimes I'm on the flip side where I just let it go. And I think we're going to have both sides of that, and everybody's going to have some degree of that and having a balance, right? So that's the first thing I'll mention. Consistency is basically, it comes with confidence. So if you start to give yourself these goals that are not attainable, you're never going to be consistent with them, right? Mm-hmm. So if you say, I'm going to never touch this, I'm never going to eat meat, I'm never going to have a pretzel, I'm never going to have this, I'm never going to have that, and you go full force into a workout regimen and you've completely changed your routine and you try and do it overnight, you're never going to be consistent with that because it's too too much change. So my recommendation is to make one small change and grow your confidence in yourself that way. And if it's, I'm just going to not eat chicken anymore. And if I do have chicken, it's going to be 10% of the time. Mm-hmm. 90% of the time, I'm going to be good about it. And then it will grow and grow. And you have committed to something that's very feasible for you, right? It's just one thing. And then the next time you do something, you make it another small thing. And then those things build on each other. And you've created this confidence about yourself to do it, right?
Mm-hmm. I like that you link it to confidence. Yeah. Because it does. Anytime that we can trust ourselves and we go, oh, yeah, okay, I've already done that. So I am capable of the next thing, you know? So I know. I think that was part of it too, like letting the big picture get too big for me when I said, can I maintain this after, I finished these 3 weeks when my fridge is stocked with food, and all that. So I'm, just trying to slow it way back and go, okay, well, I can gain this confidence just by doing it little by little.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then that feeds into all of a health journey, I suppose, even if you're just, adapting different parts of your lifestyle.
I don't even think you could help it, right? I certainly couldn't. I never sought out to be like waking up at 5 a.m., meditating, journaling, working out, meditating when things got stressful, managing my stress. The goals I have now just came from the first step because I felt how good that felt. Then it just opened doors where I was getting information to me that would benefit me, in other aspects of my life that would, push forward my health and put, that's mental health, that's physical health, spiritual health. Mm-hmm. And so it's just kind of like this snowball that just keeps going. And you're kind of on this journey where you're like, it feels like maybe things are getting harder and they're, but you're just learning along the way and you're finding a way to adapt. And I think when when you really commit to your health journey, just kind of, it's like a snowball.
Yeah.
It never stops. Like, for you, I think it's the same way. It's like
100%
not drinking, and then you're going back to this vegan thing, and then it's never going to stop. You're just going to keep finding ways to better yourself.
Yes, and when I look at the other side of it, like let's say think about having a drink or something, I'm more inclined to ask myself why, and get in touch with whatever else is going on because it's never just about the drink.
And I think that's one of the biggest things I can say about these habitual things we do. Having awareness about it is much different, and doing it anyway is very different than not having an awareness around it.
Yeah, well put.
And if you have that awareness about what else is going on and you give yourself that cheat or that whatever anyway, then the next time you're able to really get deeper into like the desire or the why, right? Mm-hmm. And it makes those choices more cognizant. It's really putting you in like that active place of being intentional about your life. Oh, I know I'm going to do this. Oh, I know how I'm going to feel. And,
right.
And then it's like the onus is on you. Like you've done this. This is your responsibility. Mm-hmm. How do you want to feel?
Yeah. Do you tell your patients that?
Yeah. I mean,
like pay attention.
Yeah, be intentional.
Know how you're going to feel.
I think it's hard when you're just doing everything on autopilot. So I try and start kind of where they are, kind of gauge where they are.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And if they're only ready for a few messages, I don't always start there, but.
Yeah. How do you feel about the health insurance system and how are you navigating that?
Oh, I'm glad you asked that. I don't take insurance. I'll say that.
Cool. I've interviewed a lot of people that are operating outside that system. So
yeah. And I actually just got an email from a patient today whose insurance isn't covering something. And so I know, I don't take insurance when they see me, but when I send labs, they already have insurance. So I can send their labs underneath their insurance, but they weren't covering it with a certain code. And it's going to be a process in order to get this very necessary, minuscule lab covered under insurance. And so I think it's, I worked in a hospital system with a lot of hospital administrators. And I don't think they're bad people, but they're driven by the money and the outcomes. And a lot of times that will look like getting patients out of the hospital before they're really ready to go. And, you know, minimizing things that they could use for their treatments. Or, you know, it's a tough road to navigate. And insurance is a big beast in that. And it's just jumping through hoops. And I mean, it's an industry, and just like any other industry, they're trying to produce revenue. And so they're going to cut costs where they can. And it's hard. It's hard on doctors. It takes up a lot of our time. I mean, we didn't go to, when we went to medical school, I know I didn't. Surely they're teaching it now because you just have to. But billing for insurance is like a whole subset of what you have to know when you're just writing a note about what the patient went through.
How depressing.
It's so depressing.
I mean, you have your own stress in your business that you're even describing, you know, that you have to figure out healthy ways to cope with and navigate.
And for me, who all I really want to do is just help patients. It's such a strain. I mean, we put so much strain on our physicians. There's such a high level of burnout. I really wish that we could figure it out better, because otherwise we're just not going to have these very noble people who want to help people going into this profession. And that's really the saddest part of it all.
Why did you go into this profession?
You know, I was 5 years old and I decided I wanted to be a doctor, and I never
And that was it?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Like that, that's a calling. I think that's what that is.
Yeah.
You're lucky.
Well, thanks.
Yeah. I mean, to know that and just be like, yep, that's it.
Yeah. And it's funny how the path took me, because I, you know, I actually have a very, I'm like right and left brain. I was a chemistry major, but also I did painting in college and was an art major as
Yes, I wanted to, I'm going to ask you about that actually too.
And so, I mean, I've had doubts. I'm like, maybe I'd be happier just doing my artwork, or maybe I'd be happier as an interior designer, an architect or something like that. But I do believe it was a calling, and it's taken me in weird ways. Like, I really have found my purpose now, but I was certain I wanted to be a dermatologist. And then somehow I self-sabotaged into like not having a great third year medical school and not getting, like, you know, dermatology is very competitive, or it was when I was applying, and I didn't get the AOA credential that I wanted. And, you know, I didn't do great in my interviews. And so I tried and tried, and I, you know, I've been very like, I'm going to get what I set my mind after. I'm very determined and persistent. And that didn't work out for me. And then I ended up in internal medicine, not by default, but because I loved everything. Like, if it wasn't going to be dermatology, I didn't know what else I wanted to do, because I loved gastroenterology. I loved surgery. I loved cardiology. I, you know, and I could have done any number of things. And so then it was medicine, and medicine what is what led me to lifestyle medicine. And I think that, like, life had a really good path for me that I'm seeing now that I didn't really see, you know, when I was in the trenches of residency in medical school.
Isn't that the way it goes?
Yeah.
It sounds like such a good fit though. I mean, it's obviously like, perfect fit.
I know. And like, I wouldn't be as healthy or as vibrant or have the feeling of well-being that I have now if I hadn't gone through that journey. So I feel like I'm my highest self. And I've had this beautiful journey.
Oh, that makes my heart feel good. Yeah. Like, I can feel that. So that's so awesome. Yeah, I wanted to ask you, since you do have a background too in art, it said visual arts, dancing, painting, things like that, right? How much of that, you know, you still do, and how much of that you consider an integral part of the lifestyle medicine of our holistic health?
Well, I don't. I was just talking to my office manager today. We're both very like right and left brain. And so a lot of what I do in terms of creating now goes into business, like goes into, you know, social media posts or media kits or, you know, different marketing things. But I have been able to integrate some aesthetics into my practice, which I just love, because I just like, I get so excited about what I can do with a filler or something like that, which my husband, he's like, why do you have all these different avenues? Just stick to one. And I'm like, I love this. Like, I love this part of, you know, my job or my practice. So that's one thing. And when you talk about kind of how that fits into lifestyle medicine, I just think every person, no matter what their skill set, is going to have a different way of caring for a patient, right? And so whatever I know from that creative side of my brain goes into how I can assess a patient, how I can be empathic for them. I mean, I don't know if I can correlate it to like one action, but sure, just kind of how I coordinate a care of a patient.
Yeah. And I was wondering too, just from a holistic perspective of advice, you know, do you, you know, recognize that outlet of artisticness, I guess?
It's meditative in itself if you're doing mm-hmm. something creative. Like if I can get into a flow, whether I'm painting, which I haven't done for a while, but, you know, working on a course right now, I'm working on a course and it gets very mm-hmm. creative and you get in that flow and you're not in that sympathetic, I'm releasing all these catecholamines or this cortisol. You're in this very sympathetic state and that's really healing for the body.
Yeah, it really is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like to create too. So yeah, it's been a big part of myself and sometimes I'll forget that I'm being creative, but I like that you just talked about injections and the artistry there, you know, because everybody's being creative in their own way if they can just tap into whatever it is. Oh, yeah. At least I think, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
When you get into that flow.
Yes.
State,
yes.
Time kind of goes away. Mm-hmm. And you're just, yeah.
You mentioned a little bit about your own practices and habits and daily schedule. So uh-huh. you're a riser at 5 a.m.
I'm a 5 a.m. riser.
Did we talk about that on Women of Austin? Didn't we talk about a 5 a.m. club or something like that?
It's a book.
So oh, I read okay. a book. You read a book. Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah. I've read a couple mm-hmm. books.
Yeah. Me too.
Yes. So it's a book. It's a great book. It's kind of told in story form. And the beginning of the book has this really great kind of monologue about if you have this calling in your life to, you know, expand and to give gifts, then it really is your, I don't know if it says duty, but it's your responsibility to really put it out. And then that's kind of what led into the book. And so I was very motivated to see like how this was going to play out. And it's kind of told from the eyes of like a guru who had all this abundance and, you know, his advice was to get up every day at 5 a.m. and start with, you know, he has like kind of a 20-20-20 rule where it's like 20 minutes of meditation, 20 minutes of journaling, or 20 minutes of movement, 20 minutes of learning something. So I kind of do something similar where I get up, I say what I'm grateful for, and then I will meditate, and then I will journal, and then I will exercise. And then I do the learning thing in the car on the way, you know, mm-hmm. with podcasts or audiobooks or, you know, so it's like always be learning, always be grateful, always be moving kind of thing.
Yeah. And you started implementing all this, what, in the last couple of years?
Yeah. I'm trying to think. When did I read the book? Probably a year and a half ago. And that's when I started waking up at 5.
How's that been going for you?
Great.
You like it? I mean, you have two little kids, so I get it.
I mean, I need that time, right? Because they wake up at like 6:45. Yeah. My husband wakes up somewhere, depends like on the day, but 6 or 6:30. And I need that time to myself.
Me too.
And if I don't.
I do it too. Yeah.
Oh, you get up at 5.
I don't get up at 5. I get up at 5:17.
But as long as you have the time.
Sometimes
yeah, mine's like,
get up a little later.
Sometimes looks like 5:17.
Yeah, too. I'm divorced, so sometimes my kids aren't here. So sometimes I'll get up at 6,
yeah.
6:30.
But and as long as
I'll
you have
still
that
take
time,
that time.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the key. It's not so much the 5 a.m. Now, I'm no expert. You should ask the author of the book if the time makes a difference.
You're doing it, so I'm going to call you an expert.
Yeah.
So.
But I think the time that you have to yourself to really center yourself is the most important.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah. I do too. It just, it makes you not reactive to the day.
Oh
you know?
My God. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We talked about that, didn't we?
We might have.
Yeah. You just respond from a more centered place.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. And then I know that for me too, then I'm paying more attention to my sleep. And when I'm not super tired, I'm not shoving any food into my face. So
there, I mean, and that's, there's a science behind that. I mean, yes. There's studies that show you have less willpower around food when you eat foods that are less nutrient dense when you haven't slept as well.
Damn. I definitely know that. Yeah. And I'm too tired to make something, to even cut something up.
Yeah.
Right. And make an effort.
And then, you know, companies benefit from that. They've marketed, they scientifically have engineered their food so that it hits the receptors that will make you overeat it. So like when you're tired and you have no willpower, you're you're SOL.
Yeah, you're doomed. And then it becomes a cycle to where you're even more tired, not sleeping as well, and then you're eating.
And then you get depressed because your stomach's all off. And
wow. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a lot of information.
So do you take any supplements and everything? Like, what do you supplement with, or do you mainly rely on nutrient-dense foods?
So my view on supplements is that if devoid of any nutritional deficiency, supplements aren't going to help your body, right? Your body has a capacity for nutrients, right? And if you take more than that, not only is it not going to really help you or help your survival, it's probably going to cause toxicity in some areas of supplements. That being said, I stay out of the sun, so I do take a vitamin D. Mm-hmm. I take an omega-3, a vegan omega-3, because I don't really eat fish, and I know that that is a beneficial essential fatty acid. I do take a B12, although I've learned some plant-based items that have B12 in them, like algae and things like that. But I will say that there have been reviews, like there's a Cochrane review that shows there's certain supplements that not only don't help with like mortality and disease, they actually can be deleterious, and even in healthy individuals can cause an increase in mortality. So supplements are not benign, and there's a huge supplement industry. So you have to be careful. And so my take is, if you are getting a really well-balanced diet with a lot of variety of plant foods, you're going to be getting all those vitamins, minerals, phytonutrients that are great for your health, and you don't need to supplement. Mm-hmm. That is my honest to God take on supplementation. However, I think by and large, the majority of Americans eat a diet that's totally devoid of nutrients. And, you know, I don't know, for different people, they may look very different, but, you know, a lot of these fortified cereals and stuff, they don't have the plethora of vitamins and minerals that are in our plant foods, right? Mm-hmm. And so if that's the majority of your diet, or if you're getting a lot of, fried foods, or if you're just eating like potato chips or fries over and over again, you're not going to be having this diversity of vitamins and minerals that you probably need, in which case I think a multivitamin is okay.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah. Good to know. I take B12 too. And I have for a long time. So, but I know that too much B can cause neural issues or something like that. Right. So,
yeah. And it depends. There's a lot of B vitamins, right? Yeah, yeah. So it depends on what you're taking. And B12, you really just need a tiny, tiny, tiny bit. You could take it like every 2 weeks and get,
oh, really?
Yeah. It's like 1.2 micrograms or something. Is it RDU or something?
So okay.
It's very little. You can just, I have a spray B12. You can take it like every 2 weeks.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I think I was under the impression that I had to take it every single day. Oh my gosh.
No.
Okay.
Not at all.
Good.
But yeah, B12 can affect your nerves. So if you're having some nerve issues, either back off. But
that's what I've heard. Nerve. That was it.
Mm-hmm. B12, you can get like numbness and tingling if you are deficient too. So, that's just something to keep in mind.
Well, we're coming to the end of time.
Okay.
And I wanted to say huge thank you for everything that you shared today.
I hope I just didn't ramble, but
you did,
I got
not at
impassioned
all.
About all the things.
I'm glad. That's what I want.
Good.
I love it. And it shows. And I love everything that you're building. And I just so agree with, you know, one of your principles, which is helping optimize your lifestyle habits. And I just wanted to turn the floor over to you before we go with anything that is on your heart or your mind or anything you want to leave people with before we wrap up.
You know, I just want for people what I have felt. It's better than any, you know, short-term gain or short-term reward from food or alcohol or anything. Just to have that sense of well-being. And it's so profound, and it really just gives so much meaning to life and to family and to work and to purpose and to friends and connections. And that's all. And I want it for everybody. It's really changing my life. It's, you know, and I think that a good way to get there is, you know, by affecting your life in these areas.
Beautiful. How can everybody find you?
So I'm on Instagram as Brookie Stubbs MD.
And all this will be in the show notes as well.
Okay, so, great. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then you can follow my practice Instagram @rootedfem. Mm-hmm. I also, you can go to rootedfem.com if you'd like to book an appointment. There's a link there. I will be putting out a course, an 8-week course, January 8th. If you'd like to sign up, you can go to rootedfem.com to access that.
What is your course about?
It's an 8-week course about a lot of the things we talked about, but mainly I want to give people the step-by-step and easy recipes and, you know, just attainable tips to really get into a foundation for the life that they deserve.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Wonderful. And then your podcast.
Oh, yeah. That Rooted Feeling. It's on mm-hmm. Spotify and Apple and probably some other places too. I do that with my friend Jamie and it's great. It talks about a lot of these topics and we have fun guests and I'd love to have you on sometime.
Oh my gosh, I would love, yeah. I would be honored. Yes, yeah, absolutely. I have a course coming out too, so we can talk all about all sorts of things.
Awesome. Yes. What's your course about?
I have a free mini course on the ageless mindset and a longer one called the youthfulness hack. And it's just nine segments about all different things that we can implement. Everything I talk about on this show. So yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. good. I'm signing up.
Oh, great.
I'll be the first client.
Thank you. Same here. Yeah. I can't wait. So thank you so much. And I'll put everything in the show notes, how everyone can find you. Great. And I encourage everyone to connect with you. And if they're interested.
And I want to mention too, I have an app too to help you eat variety of plant foods. It's called the Rooted Food mobile app, Rooted Food in Apple.
Fabulous.
Or, yeah.
Oh my gosh. That's so cool. Yes. I'm downloading that right away because. Thank you. Because I'm going to keep pursuing this because I'm really enjoying what I'm doing right now.
It's fun to know how many plant foods you're getting.
That's what I want. Does it help you get to those 30 and stuff?
It does. And it kind of shows you what colors and categories you're getting. Cool. So it's great.
Oh my gosh. We're doing that around here for sure. So thank you. And thank you for all you're doing. I'm just so grateful to have met you. So I'm excited.
Same, Amy.
Yeah. Thank you. Everyone be sure to follow Brookie Stubbs. I'm going to put everything in the show notes and Rooted Femme. So I also am just so glad that you're here because we're all here to keep up leveling. And, you know, it's so funny. We can make things so complicated when it's really quite simple. And I think that this conversation reminded me again of that, of how I can overcomplicate things when it's really simple and just getting down to our roots. And so thank you for being here and thank you for paying attention to your life. If again, this called to you in some way, share it with a friend, please rate and review. It helps us grow. And I'm so grateful for you. So thank you so much for being here for me, for Brooke and for yourself. And I love you so much. Any other business, subscribe to the newsletter. If you haven't yet, I'll be sharing information about my course too. And you know what? I'll put Brooke's in there as well when it comes along. And so that's at amyedwards.com. I love you so much. Thank you for being here. You're a rock star.
This has been the Amy Edwards Show from Overcome Studios. Remember to rate, review, and subscribe. And thank you so much for being here. Sign up for our newsletter at amyedwards.com.